I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. This is a kind of little bonus episode, really. Just looking back over the events that took place in the UFC this weekend. Doing that with me always, Blake Harrison. All right?
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm all right. Not too bad. You've gone a bit rogue with your background. What's going on there?
Yeah, we're not being twins today with the brick wall. I keep thinking the light in the room that I record in is pretty shocking. So I've tried to move everything in front of a window. And I know what you're going to say. And you're going to tell me I'm a douchebag because of I'm sat in front of some award shit.
Weren't even going to mention them.
No, yeah, of course you weren't. Nice open window. Yeah. Natural light. I think it looks a bit better.
Absolutely. Let's not talk about them awards that are behind you. Like, there's no point even mentioning them. What's the little tractor? Is that from Bob the Builder?
Oh, yeah. Some people may not know. I played Scoop on Bob the Builder for a bit. So they gave me a little scoop. If you're just listening to this on a podcast, this is just fucking boring.
No, but if you want to go over to YouTube, you can look at his fucking BAFTA. Is that a little NME award next to that with a middle finger?
Little NME award, yeah. Some comedy awards.
Are you trying to make out you was a cool NME guy?
Yeah, no, I had no fucking clue. Just because it won like a TV show thing for the Inbetweeners. I'll tell you what I do like though, and I will highlight this because a fan made this.
Right.
There's one of those little Funko Pop things, but an Inbetweeners one.
That's cool.
So, yeah. There you go. There's that. So, yeah. Shall we carry on? I can talk you through all my DVDs if you want. You know, there's a little Lord of the Rings section.
We're good. Do you know what, right? Yeah. Everyone that I've ever done podcasts with always has some sort of award, right? So, on one of my other podcasts, I was moaning about the fact that I never had an award. I've never won anything, right? So I have this one.
What's that? Was it neediest? for those listening to the podcast, can you please say what the award is for?
It's the neediest cunt award because I always wanted an award. So yeah, he's refashioned one that looks like it's for fly fishing or something. But
I thought it was like a cowboy with like a lasso or something. I
don't know. It's quite a weird little thing. But yeah. Refashioned. It was the world's greatest angler presented to M. Plunkett in 1986. Refashioned to Stu Whiffin Neediest Cunt Award. There you go.
There you go. So now that we've got all our awards out of the way... This, as you mentioned, is sort of a little bonus episode, only because we've had some slight kind of controversy over this weekend's flyweight main event of the UFC Fight Night between Kaikar France and Amir Albazi. Lots of people are shouting and moaning about the judging and about... how they've scored it, and they believe that despite the fact that Amir Albazi won by decision, I believe it was a split decision, they believe that that Kaikar France won and that it was clear as day, and they're moaning. So Do we want to talk about that, or do we want to quickly talk through some of the other moments on the card and then get really into the Amir Abazi Kaikara France thing?
Sure. I mean, I've not got the full card in front of me. I don't know if you have, but there was a few scraps on there that I really enjoyed. And I did really enjoy the Kaikara France fight, but we'll get on to that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Caceres versus Pineda was amazing. It did win fight of the night. I thought that third round in particular, the way that, I mean, credit to Pineda for withstanding all those body shots, but Caceres hit him with some mean kicks to the body, some punches as well. And I thought he looked absolutely fantastic. And then, right at the end of, I think it was round three, Pineda comes back with a big overhand and kind of knocks down Caceres. It was an absolutely cracking fight. If you haven't seen it yet, Caceres-Pineda, which I believe was the co-main of Saturday's card, it's worth a watch, particularly that third round. It's a really fun round.
There was a lot of fights that cancelled and all fell through, wasn't there, on that card? I think, obviously, Mike Brand's opponent got replaced, if I remember right. That was one of the ones, I'm sure, that...
Jim Miller's opponent.
Who did I say?
Yeah. Mike Brown.
Mike Brown.
Another old bloke.
Jim Miller is obviously who I meant. I mean, fucking hell, Jim Miller.
Whoa. Jim Miller, like... What is this like? I've got his record. I was just like 36-17-1. I'm not great at maths, but that's a lot of fights, isn't it?
Add them all up, and you're still nowhere near his age. Like, it's unreal.
But phenomenal stuff. Phenomenal stuff. And one of his goals is, I believe I'm right in saying this, he fought at UFC 100. He fought at UFC 200, and his aim is to fight at UFC 300, which I believe will be around this time, maybe a bit later, next year.
Yeah.
That is quality, isn't it? To say you fought at UFC 100, 200, or 300, I really hope it happens. And he even said he'll move up to welterweight to fight if he can get just a really quality fight. And we've heard a bit about Matt Brown tying the knockouts, is he now tied with Derek Lewis for the knockouts?
I think so.
Tied with Derek Lewis. So, I mean, the greatest knockout artist of all time, potentially, if he gets another win before Derek Lewis does, against a guy with second most finishes in the UFC with 17, that's Jim Miller, and 25 UFC wins overall, 42 UFC fights. So I think 25 UFC wins and 42 UFC fights overall. I think they're both the top records.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, isn't it?
The Matt Brown fight's great. He did say in that post-fight, you know, I'm not one for calling people out, but I'd really like to fight the people that, you know, that I've been watching for years that inspire me and things like that. So, you know, he's obviously looking for, you know, the kind of veterans and the kind of golden fights, really, and fucking hell, like Sean Shelby should start throwing something like that his way, because giving him, you know, obviously the fight fell through and he was, you know, this guy was brought in and it was his UFC debut, and I mean, and that's an unfortunate debut,
he was KO'd in seconds, wasn't he, and it was a bad one.
Was it 9 seconds or something like that?
Goes to show, even with age, there's levels to this.
Absolutely. But yeah, give him some, like I say, Matt Brown, what a fucking great fight that'd be. Like,
yeah, man.
You know, like...
I heard someone, I think it was, I heard Mike Heck, who's a journalist I follow on Twitter and stuff, and I listen to some of his stuff every now and again. He was saying, what if they brought Nick Diaz back?
Yeah, boy.
Fight Jim, that'd be fun as well. So that could be a really fun pick. Another kind of maybe feel-good story of the night was Tim Elliott, because are you aware of the Tim Elliott stuff that's gone on recently on his Twitter and all of that?
No, I love Tim Elliott, by the way.
Tim Elliott put out on Twitter only like a month or so ago about a picture. I mean, the way it was done, I was like, I'm not sure if this is the right way to go about it, Tim, but, you know, I don't know how he's feeling. So however he wants to deal with it is down to him. But what happened was Tim Elliott put out on Twitter a picture of him on his wedding day next to his now wife, who was with his daughter, and I'm assuming like an usher or best man or something like that in the background. And he put out a tweet saying, this woman, my wife, I've just found out she's been shagging my my best man, and they were even together on our wedding night. So I mean, whether you think that that is the right thing to do, to put that out on Twitter or not, you know, that's down to the individual.
I think it's safe to say your head would be upside down when you find out news like that, betrayed your wife and your best friend. I mean, fuck me, who would cheat on someone with a fucking UFC fighter's wife? I mean, that's dangerous, right?
Well, we've just been having a conversation off air that we can't talk about, so let's not go any further into that conversation. It's not involving any of us, by the way.
Just
FYI. But yeah, God, man. I mean, for him to have gone through that is a pretty horrible, horrible thing to have gone through. And then he gets a win, and a good win as well, after something so horrible happening to him. Hopefully now, you know, hopefully this fight camp and all that has been a great distraction for him. I think they maybe mentioned something like that on the commentary as well. So hopefully this has been a distraction for him. He gets things right. He gets all these horrible people out of his life, and he can go on and have a good life going forward. But God, what an awful thing to have to go through for anyone who's had a spouse or even just a partner cheat on them, and then you find out it's with like one of your best mates, or that's just low, isn't it? So good on Tim Elliott for getting a win after going through such horrible stuff. Speaking of horrible stuff, did you see Karine Silva's knee bar / leg lock? Did you see the knee pop?
Yeah, boy.
Oh no. I was just like, my wife just kind of like ran in the room, because I was going, oh no, oh God, no. It was horrible to watch. You're seeing the pop of the old of the knee go. But Karine Silva looks decent. I mean, she did that very, very quickly, and just seemed to be able to get into that position with ease. I don't think Caitlin Souza even thought she was in that much trouble.
And within a split second, she knew she was.
Oh, Jesus, did she? And I think I've heard people talking about the fact that it's been put down as like a victory by knee bar. But there's been a lot of people that know a bit about jiu-jitsu, I think, that have been sort of saying it's not a traditional knee bar. It's different. It's not the same thing. It's not like what Mohamed Makhachev was caught in in London in March by Philo. It was different. So maybe she didn't realize how much danger she was in. And you just saw it pop out of place, and it was, it just gets my stomach going just thinking about it. It was so bad. But Karine Silva looks really tasty.
I'll tell you who had a bad night in the office, Mr. Andrei Arlovsky. And up until then, in fairness, I mean, we spoke about this briefly earlier, and you said, you know, he had been looking good in recent fights. And he was looking good. And you could tell that he's adapted his fight style. His footwork was really good, and he was obviously just trying to fight more at range and really pick his shots, because, you know, he's had some horrible knockouts, and as much as he was, you know, I guess establishing that jab a little bit and was looking half decent, when the shot landed, it was just good night. And yeah, I don't know. I know. You know, you referenced that, you know, the recent sort of fights that he's had, but for me, I mean, I don't know how old Arlovsky is now.
44, I think.
44, like,
I think he is.
I mean, the guys, if he's not already in the Hall of Fame, surely he's got to be in there at some point.
Yeah,
like, you know, absolute legend. And you know, he was, when I first started watching UFC, like, he was very much a big part of it. And you know,
I remember him again. I wasn't like huge into it at the time, but I remember specifically like the guy with this shaggy dark hair and the fang gum shield, and you're like, this guy looks sick, he looks amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so fingers crossed, you know, he didn't pick up too many injuries out of that, and personally I'd like to see him maybe just kind of look at something else. I don't want to see Andrei Arlovsky getting knocked out anymore. He's I think he's got nothing left to prove. But you happy to see him?
I think
have
so.
Have his brain smashed around his skull?
Don't say it like that. But no, I think he's done well. Like, he hasn't lost that many. Has he lost, like, three of his last, like, eight or something like that? He's not terrible. He's not. He's doing all right. And a lot of times...
He's no Sam Alvey.
No, definitely. Who is Sam Alvey? God bless him. But yeah, no, I'd have to quickly pull up his record or whatever to see kind of where he's at the moment in terms of, you know, wins and losses and stuff. But yeah, man, I don't think of Andre Arlovsky as a guy that needs to hang up the gloves immediately. I mean, yes, he's old, and looking at it now, he has had 56 fights in his career. So, you know, he's no spring chicken. And as we've said as well, 44 years old. All right, so he's lost his last two, but before that, he was on a 4-fight win streak. And this is all recent. This is all from 2021. Yeah, yeah. So 4-fight win streak. Before that, he lost only to Tom Aspinall. 2 wins. Lost to Jairzinho Rozenstruik. You know, these are top guys that he's losing to. I mean, Marcus Rodrigo de Lima is not necessarily a top guy. And then Dontel Mays, I'm not sure, is a top guy either in comparison to the likes of Rozenstruik and Tom Aspinall, obviously. But as I say, 4-fight win streak after the Tom Aspinall loss, that's, you know, nothing to be sniffed at this level, especially when you're dealing with a guy that's 44 years of age. So yeah, I'm not in a hurry to see him hang up the gloves, but obviously if he decides to, it's understandable. But if he enjoys doing it, then fine. Let's get on to the main reason that we're doing this episode, shall we?
So there was so much kind of backlash from the what the judges, well, how the judges scored it. And I've got the, obviously it was 48-47, 48-47, 48-47, and two of those in the favour of Albazi. I've not rewatched it. I think you have.
I have.
When I watched it Sunday morning, I definitely gave it to Kai Kara France. So,
do you remember how you gave it to Kai Kara France?
Looking at Chris Lee's scorecard, which is the scorecard that's been most discussed, is round 4. And I have no idea how he gave round 4 to Albazi, because for me that was a clear round for Kai Kara France. Where did you score round 4?
I scored it for Kai. But I scored the overall fight. When I've watched it twice, my opinion hasn't really changed since watching it twice. If anything, I think it's just closer. But I scored the entire fight for Albazi. And so anyone that is moaning, crying robbery and all this kind of stuff about the fact that Albazi won, I just don't understand where you're coming from.
Who did you give the first round to?
That's that round, to me, is you could literally just go, I'll just flip a coin to decide this.
Sure.
Because it really could go to anyone. It was really, really close. Could have gone either way. There was very little action in it. I think Kai landed a couple of good leg kicks.
Yeah.
Albazi answered back with one of them. Landed a few strikes of his own. Like, damage-wise, it really was much of a muchness. Round one, if you scored it for Kai, fair play to you. I won't argue with that at all. But I scored it for Albazi, and it really was that close that you could go either way. So you can't moan about round one, whether it's scored for Albazi or Kai. You can't moan about it. It was very, very, very close. And this is ones where they could use 9-9 scorecards more often, but they don't. So I don't know why. But this could have been a draw this round. It was so close. In terms of round two, I thought this was a much clearer Albazi round.
I gave round two to Albazi.
I thought he landed the heavier strikes. It's cleaner, heavier strikes. There was a lot going on as well in the striking exchanges for both fighters, but I think particularly with Kai early on, where it looked like he was throwing a lot of strikes, a lot of volume, but a lot of them were either missing or coming off the gloves or the shoulders or something like that. So they weren't impactful strikes. So I don't really think you can count them. And when people refer to the statistics, particularly...
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
What the UFC are bringing up immediately during the broadcast, they're not like verified. They are kind of immediate things that we're just imagining work because, you know, the camera's at one angle and it looks like someone's head's been snapped back, but really they've just dodged out of the way of it and stuff. So you can't trust the stats. The stats are not to be trusted, particularly during the broadcast. So I've got it 2 rounds up Albazi at this stage. You could have it 1-1, and I've got no problem with that. Round 3 is where it gets sort of interesting for me because I've heard some people talk about, well, that's an obvious Albazi round because he had so much control and all this stuff. How did
I gave Albazi 2 and 3.
Yeah, so I gave Albazi round 3 as well. But I do think there's a world in which, when you rewatch round 3, for me, the deciding factor has got to be what gets more points. A fight-ending scenario where Albazi has got Kai Kara-France in a deep rear-naked choke, which really could have finished it. It was really deep, it was really tight around the neck, and it could have finished things. So how high do you score that in comparison to the 30 seconds of ground and pound and elbows that Kai Kara-France lands at the end of round 3? Because whilst Albazi had a lot of the control for that round, I think he had the majority of his control time for the whole fight just in that one round, a lot of his strikes that he's doing were answered by Kai Kara-France when Albazi had his back. Kai Kara-France was throwing his hand over his shoulder and hitting Albazi in the face. And Albazi was hitting Kai in the face. None of those strikes really looked hugely impactful. A lot of them before Albazi took his back but still had him down were kind of blows that were like, it was almost like his forearm was hitting Kai Kara-France. He wasn't catching him on the end of the punch or anything. So I kind of think I'll lean Albazi because he had the better position. He probably generated a little bit more power in those exchanges. And I think the fight-ending scenario, although I don't know this for certain, I'd love to talk to a judge about this and say, how do you compare the ground and pound and the damage that Kai Kara-France is doing at the end of round 3 to Albazi's fight-ending scenario where he had a deep rear naked choke and he's probably not far off finishing the fight? I gave it to Albazi, but I think if you are someone that gave round 3 to Kai Kara-France because of the damage done towards the end, because everything up to that point, damage-wise, was relatively even, then I can sort of see that as well. But I think I gave that to Albazi. So going into round 4, look, I've got Albazi 3-0 up.
Right, okay. So I've got it 2-1 to Kai at this point. But what I want to make clear is, you know, I know our takes on this differentiate, but anyone using the word robbery is on crack because that is not a robbery. Like it's a super tight fight this, and I do believe, you know, it does come down to a certain round that could have gone either way. You know, all of the stuff where people are getting really aggy about it, I don't really get it. I think it was it was tight.
Well, I've got a theory about that, but what I just want to say is, did you have rounds 4 and rounds 5 in favour of Kai? I imagine. I thought round 4 was like possibly the clearest round. I thought round 2 was sort of clear, Albazi, but you know, it was close-ish. I thought 4 for Kai was very, very clear. And I thought 5 was likely to be a Kai round as well. So I end up doing it 1, 2 and 3 for Albazi, 4 and 5 for Kai. You've gone 1, 4 and 5 for Kai and 2 and 3 for Albazi. So really, the only thing we're disagreeing on is round 1. And as I say, I think you can watch round 1 and then just go, I don't know, let's flip a coin. Because it really is that close. So maybe towards the end of round 1, they had that moment where they were sort of staring at each other and Albazi tried to be cute and mirror Kai with the whole hands, almost hands behind the back thing. And Kai did land a sort of right hand at the end of a little exchange after that. But, I mean, it really wasn't much in the whole round. Round 1 was clearly a very, very close round. So you can't get upset if it goes the way you thought it did or the way you didn't think it did. Every other round we've got an agreement on. So we understand where each other's coming from with this. There's no way it's a robbery. I think we should talk about the scorecards in a minute because I think that's where maybe a lot of people are going to get frustrated and maybe rightfully so. But one thing I think is if you are gambling and you are betting on these fights and things haven't gone your way and then you're moaning about it, I don't think you're impartial. And I think you are someone that has got skin in the game. And when your guy doesn't win, of course you're going to be angry about it, particularly in a very close fight that could have gone his way. If you potentially looking at losing 20 quid or winning 200 quid or whatever the odds may be, and you've ended up losing that, of course you're going to not be impartial. You are going to have a biased opinion on what happened, and maybe that's where people's anger and frustration online is coming from.
Well, let's touch on that a little, because some of the frustration come by way of Australia and New Zealand, and understandably that's going to be a slightly biased opinion. City Kickboxing companion Izzy had plenty to say, and I can quote some of it here. And he's focusing it mainly on judges Chris Lee and Sal D'Amata, and starts off with fire Chris Lee and Sal D'Nuts, tweeted Adesanya. I tweeted that before even seeing the scorecards, because I know them two will fuck it up, tweeted Adesanya. How many times will they rob athletes of their moments of glory, of their money, their livelihood for their family? Fuck them cunts. A friend of the show, Volk, tweeted, giving Amir round 4 is just insane. Judge Chris Lee gave Albazi that round, which was widely considered a Kai Kara France round. I agree with what Volk said there.
I don't know how you give Albazi round 4.
Yeah,
I thought that was the clearest round of the whole fight, probably.
And that was a very important, point of the scorecards. And then Adesanya then put, start interviewing the judges after fights, hold them accountable for their work. I mean, I'm not sure I agree with that. I think, you know, that's, you're not going to start interviewing referees after a football match. I think, you know, it's, I don't know.
Part of me would like to see, like, referees and stuff interviewed afterwards, actually. But I actually think, the problem I see with that is fan bases for, like, either football or particularly with MMA with the judges, because the judges do have a certain amount of anonymity. And there is part of me that thinks when you are dealing with someone's livelihood, you having anonymity is maybe not 100% right, because, to an extent you should be held accountable. But I believe also that MMA fans and maybe even some people around the fight game that are even closer to it than the fans are not necessarily to be trusted. And we only have to see recently, I know this isn't MMA, it's football, but there's a British referee. I don't follow football much anymore, but there's a British referee that refed, was it a Europa League final or something with Roma? I know Jose Mourinho was involved. And he got to the airport in Rome and all the Roma fans were like shouting, spitting at him and his family at the airport, throwing stuff and all of that. And you're like, security had to get them out away from where they were and someone else.
What's the name of the fucking manager, dude?
Jose Mourinho.
Fucking idiot. Wait for him in a car park.
Yeah.
To abuse him.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Yeah, you just like...
Sort your life out, you sad man.
So, but I can see shit like that happening with MMA. Like, I can see, like, if the judges come out, then they walk down the street and again, a bunch of people have lost money on the fight and they're really angry about it. And they're fight fans that think they're, you know, fighters of it essentially or something like that. Then maybe that does make those judges' lives really, really difficult. And I think I've overheard Sean Sheehan talking before. So, you know, we had him on to talk about judging and stuff like that previously. So if you haven't checked out our episode with Sean Sheehan, then maybe check that out. And he's got some great stuff on his Twitter and all that about the judging criteria. If you don't know the criteria, go and check that out because it's very, very helpful. But Sean has mentioned that, you know, it's hard to get people to be judges. And it's kind of a thankless job in a lot of ways. I don't think they're paid loads and loads of money or anything. So getting them to then come out and have to answer to this like mob that's baying for their blood because they're so angry about a decision. Is that going to make people want to go, oh, I really want to be a judge? That looks like fun, doesn't it? Well, that sounds like a terrible way to earn your living. Yeah. So I can kind of understand why you wouldn't have people come out and say that. But I do think that one of the problems is people don't understand the scoring criteria because fans can't be bothered to look at it. And, you know, I myself, I've read the scoring criteria. I've looked at a few things. I could probably benefit from doing like one of Mark Goddard's courses or something like that he does courses on judging and stuff. And I probably should do that, particularly in the position we're in where we're talking about MMA. And there's more we could learn about it all to make ourselves better equipped to deal with situations like this. But just having even a basic knowledge of the criteria, I just don't see how you can call this a robbery and how you can moan about it so much when so many of the rounds were so close. I think one of the other things that affects people is if the first three rounds are incredibly close, but people think, oh, it could go either way, but all the three judges score it one way, but the other two rounds are not close at all, it's very clear who won those rounds, then people think, oh, well, that person who clearly won the rounds has won, surely, because they clearly won it. The others were just too close. But that's not how it works. Every 5-minute section is judged independently of the other sections. So you can't say, oh, well, he smashed him in those two rounds, so I'll give him round one as well, because that was just a close one. You can't do that. They've made the decision on who's won those rounds, whether it be close or not very close. The only way that they can affect that or temper that slightly is if they start bringing in, you know, more use of the 10-point must system in terms of more use of the numbers. Like, let's not go, oh, it's a 10-9 or a 10-8. Let's make their more obvious 10-7s, 10-6s. And then you can go, oh, this person, this was a really close round, but I'm going to lean Albazi, so I'll give him 10-9. But this round was a clear Cara France round, so let's give him 10-8. And then rounds that used to be a 10-8, maybe that's a 10-7 or a 10-6. And you can implement use of those numbers a bit more. It's just, you know, so I don't know. I think there's definitely ways that 10-point must system could be played with to stronger reflect the disparities between rounds and people's varied success in those rounds. I think that could be a good thing to do, but I don't see it happening anytime soon. But yeah, so in terms of the go on.
We should just also say that you know, not just the quoting Volkanizzi, there was a big outpouring of people querying that decision. One person that was completely bang on and respectful was Kai Kara France. And
really, I haven't heard what he said.
And yeah, just, you know, I think he said he thought he'd done enough, but he wished Albazi all the best. And what did you make of the way that Albazi kind of the post-fight speech? I thought it was a little bit too overconfident considering the performance that was just displayed, and it wasn't, you know, obviously he would have been aware that there was a lot of queer, you know, a lot of people that weren't on board, you know, just I know it was a pretty empty space, but I felt he didn't conduct himself in a particularly good way. It was like he just absolutely smashed him and was just calling for, you know, big names and things. I just thought, you know what, mate? I would have just dialed that back a little bit.
It's very tricky, isn't it? Because when you're in there, if you've won the fight, close split decision, you're ranked seventh, the guy you fight is ranked third, the guy you fight is just fought for an interim belt against the current champion. Like, you know, it's probably a lot of emotions going on. And from what they go through, the sacrifices, the weight cut and everything, I understand the thinking, you know, I didn't find his conduct bad or anything like that. I think he was calling for title shots and stuff, and, you know, shoot your shot. I don't think he's going to get a title shot off the back of this, but he might do. You never know what might happen. I suppose you've got to start putting that stuff out there. He's going to be ranked third or fourth or whatever in the rankings come tomorrow or whatever it is. So yeah, I don't mind him doing that. I didn't see anything from his post-fight interview, unless I didn't watch it properly, where I kind of felt like he was disrespectful or jumping up and down too much or anything like that. But
I just thought he could have dialed it back a little bit. I think, like I say, he was sort of talking about that win like he just smashed him in round one. It was like, well, I don't even think you won. Like,
yeah.
But... yeah, I think when decisions are so tight like that, I'm always in favour of the fighters that go, that was so close, you know, and just show that kind of edge of vulnerability and honesty. I quite like that. But then you don't know what they see and how many times they've been smacked in the head, you know, throughout that fight. And
well, there's that as well. You know, because the other thing is, it's really hard for you to judge necessarily, I think, how your fight's going. You might think you're doing better than what you actually are, all that stuff. What are your corner telling you? Are they telling you you're up three rounds or whatever it is? So that is difficult. I mean, going back to the scorecard thing, like, did you say it was Chris Lee that gave Albazi round four? I'm not looking at the scorecards. So
I can pull you them up, right? So Chris Lee... gave rounds 2, 3, and 4 to Albazi. Mm-hmm. Saldamata gave rounds 1, 2, and 3 to Albazi. And Mike Bell gave rounds 2 and 3 to El Barzi. And so there would have been quite a significant difference had Chris Lee have given round 4 to Kai.
But that's what I'm saying. So, like, I mean, again, people moaning and stuff, moaning about the judges. There's 3 judges. In my opinion, I'm totally happy with 2 of those judges' scorecards. Sal D'Amato, 1, 2, and 3. No problem with that. I think absolutely. You can totally say that. And then whoever the other one was giving it to Kai overall, no problem with that. Didn't disagree with any of those rounds. Chris Lee giving Al Barzi round 4 is the problem for me. Don't get me wrong. There wasn't loads of action. It wasn't clear as day, maybe, that Kai won. It wasn't like he knocked him down or landed loads of unanswered strikes. But I think Al Barzi was definitely slowing down and Kai landed more. So I think the obvious thing is to give that to Kai. People need to be moaning. If people want to have a moan about it, I think they should get a bit more specific and go, oh, Chris Lee and round 4. That's the problem. The problem isn't the judges.
So you'd rather encourage a direct witch hunt for Chris Lee, yeah?
Well, he's the one that's made the mistake, isn't it?
Because he's still getting angry about it as well, now.
No, I'm not getting angry. I've been the one defending the judges.
Do you want to throw out Chris Lee's Twitter handle, Blake? If people just want to rain on his parade,
it's at Chris. Don't pay attention to the criteria, Lee. Look. Again, you've got to realise that we're watching it on the TV where there's someone in a booth and a team of people and camera operators and all that stuff that are specifically trying to find us the best angle at every single moment of the fight. That is, we have people employed to go this angle, that angle, to show us the best action. And there's still stuff that we're going to miss. The judges sit in one spot the whole time, and it's very easy for them to miss things because they're not getting the right angle. That's why you have 3 judges, because you hope that it sort of balances itself out.
Well, we've been privy to that. When we've gone to events and before we do the show, I always want to watch it back because, you know, you don't get a broad perception of it, you know, because if it's gone to ground the other side of the octagon from what you're sitting on, I don't know for a fact, the judges will have screens in front of them as well, giving them the view that we're getting as well, I presume.
Well, I get, but I don't know. Do you know what? I don't know. You would maybe, but I'm not 100% sure. I don't know. So
when everyone's tweeting Chris Lee, they can ask him that.
Yeah, ask him that.
Yeah.
And say Blake says hi. But no, I'm not. I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, 2 of those judges' scorecards are absolutely fine to me. It's just Chris Lee round 4, I'm not sure about that. But again, I think there's excuses for it. It's just difficult because you're like, well, that's someone's paycheck. And again, I don't think the wrong guy won the fight. I scored it for Al Barzi. But how they got to that point is clearly a little bit troublesome. So I don't know. But in terms of going forward for Al Barzi, as you said, he called for the title shot, which he wants in Abu Dhabi. I don't think he's going to get that. I think Moreno and Pantoja are fighting for the belt in July, as far as I'm aware. If Brandon Moreno wins, is he really going to turn around and fight again in 3 months in enemy territory? I mean, Amir Al Barzi is from Iraq. But as he pointed out during his post-fight interview or whatever, I think it's like he feels like it's sort of home turf for him, like his people will be there, all that kind of stuff. So is Brandon Moreno, a champion who's been a champion for a little bit, or at least a 2-time champion or whatever, been around that title for a long time, whether he'd be challenging for it or holding it, is he really going to turn around in 3 months and go and fight in enemy territory? I don't see that happening. They've got a wide range of Mexican champions at the moment. So surely he's going to want to fight in Mexico.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he's got every right to kind of call them shots because, you know, he's earned that. The only thing I can think would make him go to Abu Dhabi, if I don't know, if there's some bespoke company making really cool Lego out there, maybe, you know, he'll go out there to get some bespoke Lego. But other than that, no, I can't see that. No. Like you say, have your moment, call him out. But, you know, I'd be interested to see where he is in the rankings.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, the other option is if Pantoja wins, maybe the UFC say to him, go on, fight again. Especially if he gets a quick win over Moreno. If he wins in the first couple of rounds, they might say, you turn around in 3 months, fight in Abu Dhabi, we'll give you a little extra, something, something. You'll be on the pay-per-view money as well, you know? So so that could work out. I think what's more likely, though, is we'll see Amir Albazi fight against someone like Brandon Royval, who had a great win over Nicolau. Why are you laughing at me? People on podcast, he's just smiling at me, he's just chuckling away. What's he chuckling about?
A little extra, something, something. It was like, that's the most cockney wide boy I've ever heard you. It's like you had a fucking sheepskin on there just selling fucking sports socks and lighters. It was saying something for you there, darling.
It was saying something, mate. Cocking in, a little monkey there. Yeah, solid, nice one. Mustard, mate, mustard. That's what they say back in the day. My dad used to say mustard. Or maybe... Davison Figueiredo, who wasn't cleared to fight Manel Kapp recently. I don't know why, but maybe he'll be back soon. And then you've got Albazi versus a former champ. That's a good fight, Davison Figueiredo, because he was flirting with going up to 135, then he dropped back down to 125, so I don't know what's going on there. But yeah, so I think Albazi, one more win, title shot, but I think right now, maybe he's not quite there.
Yeah. Okay, do we want to talk about Kai? I mean, there's still a whole lot of fun fights for Kai Car France. I don't think his stock's going to have dropped majorly there. It was so close, and obviously the furore that's come off the back of that. I think there's still he's a very young lad as well. There's lots of exciting things for the future of Kai, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I really like Kai. I think his fight style is fantastic. It's really great that he fights these grapplers. That's the thing, is he's a really good kickboxer, but he fights these grapplers and can keep the fight on the feet more often than not. So so I think he's a really dangerous guy. I don't know how old Kai is. I'd have to quickly look that up. But I think he's relatively young, but obviously you've got to be young in these divisions to do well. So I don't know. I think... He does have a few losses on his record, and he's lost his last two now. So the problem will be that he cannot cherry pick who he's fighting. He's going to have to fight some young up and comer. And if he takes a little break and a certain Mohamed Makhachev gets one or two wins under his belt, we might see him have to take a fight like that. But I think he'll have to fight a really, really top fighter that is, you know, surging through the rankings, and Kai's going to have to defend his spot. Maybe he'll be around like... somewhere between the 5 to 7 range, and he'll have to fight a guy ranked behind him. So I don't know. But I definitely think Kai Car France can still do great things. He's only turned 30. So, yeah, he can do well. He's still got a good few years left in him at the top of the division, I think.
Absolutely. And even if he gets to 44 and has just had a massive knockout against him, Blake's still saying, carry on, mate. Carry on, Grandad. Get back in now. Right.
Hey, I love Ski's a special breed, man. He's the pit bull. Yeah.
Right, well, we'll be back next time. I mean, we've been speaking about Kai. If you like your City Kickboxer fighters, then head over and listen to our chats. Two episodes we've had now with Volkanovski. And also go check out our interview with Dan Hooker. You can either go and listen to him wherever you get your podcasts. I presume that's where you are right now. Other than that, if you've yet to head over to the YouTube channel, go over there and marvel at my brick style wallpaper, or just marvel at the multitude of awards that Blake's got behind his head.
I've just got to point out, we've been doing this for like 2 years, and I've never done this. This is the first time I've ever done this. So
no, you've just waited till we've got 1,000 YouTube subscribers, and now you've just dropped it. It's enough of an audience for Blake.
Yeah,
right, darlings, here we go.
Yeah, I don't get out of bed for less than 1,000 viewers, you know. But yes, no, do check out the back catalogue. If you haven't watched our show before, then you can check out interviews with Paddy Pimblett, who we've had on three times, I think. Molly McCann, who we've had on twice. Tom Aspinall, Arnold Allen, Jai Herbert, the cream of the crop of UK MMA, Stevie Ray, Paul Craig.
Also,
go on.
BBC iPlayer, My Life with an MMA Fighter. Go watch the new documentary on Stevie Ray. Oh, I watched it last night. It's wonderful. And I mean, you've met Stevie's wife, haven't you?
Yeah, she was lovely.
Oh, she is so lovely. Go watch the documentary. It's all about the lead up to obviously living with or not living with Stevie, which is a lot of the focus of the documentary because of the, you know, what the stuff that MMA fighters have to kind of give up to pursue their greatness, and it's a really good little sort of fly on the wall documentary leading up to the PFL final, where obviously, you know, Stevie fell a little short of winning the $1 million, and yeah, it's a wonderful watch. So go and give that a little look.
I'm just chuckling a bit because you said MFI, which I swear was like a, isn't that like a furniture store?
As soon as you fucking started smiling, I thought, oh, fuck, he had the MFI bit, didn't
he? Yeah, the MFI, I swear, was a furniture store back in the day, if it's not still.
Yeah, it's totally just like
the,
was.
Yeah, the hard lives of these MFI workers. God, they're, you know, they're hauling the furniture.
Minimum wage.
Oh, God, it's a hard life. Right. Anyway, guys, I think, as we said, we've got a multitude of episodes for you to trawl through the back catalogue and look at. And we will also, right now, actually, start recording an episode, a preview to UFC 289, where Amanda Nunes is taking on Irina Aldana. And obviously, there's that amazing fight between Charles Oliveira and Benil Dariush as well. So we'll be talking about that, previewing that next. So that episode will be dropping very soon after this one's dropped, so keep an eye out for that as well. Are we done?
We're done. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.